This is WRUULP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with Global Soul.
Reverend Lisa Day, minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Welcome to our weekly radio program, where you'll hear a segment from one of our recent services recorded at our church on beautiful Troop Square. We invite you to join us Sundays at 11 a.m. in person or via live stream on Zoom. You can find the Zoom link and more about Unitarian Universalism in Savannah at our website, uusavannah.org. We hope you enjoy today's program.
Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah, the home of the liberal religion in the hostess city. I'm Gigi Kelly Regalizio, and I will serve as worship associate today. Our cold minister, Reverend Lisa Day, is still on medical leave, recovering from a couple of eye surgeries that she has had. I will be making church today with various people, including Laura Potts-Wirt, Jessica Levitt-Ottawa, and Megan Dunkelberg. Our worship, religious education, and covenant group theme for June is Flourishing Together. Rexana Lester is sharing our Love at the Center moment. Here at the UU Church of Savannah, we are working to build a diverse, multicultural, and beloved community. We celebrate the presence and participation of people of all races, genders, sexual orientations, abilities, and ethnic and national origins. We warmly welcome you on YouTube and on site, whoever you know yourself to be, and wherever you are on your journey. In the Unitarian Universalist tradition, our chalice stands for the light of reason, the warmth of community, and the flame of hope. Help us to be the always hopeful gardeners of the Spirit, who know that without darkness, nothing comes to birth, as without light, nothing flowers, by May Sarton.
I said to the almond tree, "Sister, speak to me of God." The almond tree blossomed. Will you please join rising in body or spirit in our first hymn, number 38, Morning Has Broken.
Like the first word.
The flower communion is a uniquely Unitarian Universalist ritual. In 1923, Dr. Norbert Kopek, minister of the Unitarian Church in Prague, was worried about the diversity of his congregation. That church, like our church and most Unitarian Universalist churches today, had members from many different religious backgrounds: Roman Catholic, Orthodox, Protestant, and Jewish. Unlike our church, the church in Prague was a very large church, approximately 5,000 members, dozens of religious backgrounds, one church. The idea of the flower communion grew out of the need Dr. Kopek felt for ritual to symbolize the voluntary coming together of all those people from different backgrounds. Our ritual today will be similar in style and serves the same purpose as the one celebrated by Dr. Kopek and his congregation almost 75 years ago. The unison prayer we will use in a few minutes to consecrate the flowers that we've brought to acknowledge their holy purpose in our service was also written by Dr. Kopek. Dr. Kopek used flowers in his ritual because people and flowers have a lot in common. There is diversity among flowers. There is diversity among people. Think about how different flowers can be from one another, just like people can be so different from one another as well. When I say the word flower, you probably see a picture of a flower in your mind. Maybe it's the flower you brought to church with you today, or maybe it was one that you took from the vase of extras. Maybe it's the dandelion you saw in the yard last week. Maybe it's a paper flower that you made in school once, or an iris that you've seen in a painting. And when I say person or man or woman or boy or girl, we each see a picture of a person in our mind. Maybe it's your friend, your teacher, your mother, your brother, or somebody famous. But all of those different flowers are still flowers. And all of those different people are still people. Each different flower that we have here today has special qualities all its own. How tall it grows, when it blooms, how much sunshine it likes. Each different kind of flower has its own appearance and its own fragrance, grows in its own fashion. And each different kind of flower is still a flower. Each different person here today also has special qualities all their own. What they look like, where they were born, who their family is, what flavor of ice cream they like best. All of them is my answer. What they believe about God, how they make their living. Each different person has their own appearance, their own religious, ethnic, cultural, religious background, and grows in their own fashion. And each kind of person is still a person. In some ways, people are the same as one another, and in other ways, they are different, just like flowers. That's what makes flowers a good symbol for a ritual about all kinds of people. We can think of different people being like different kinds of flowers. Some are like the crocus and confirm for us that a new season of spring is coming. Some are like the lady slipper or orchid, so delicate and lovely. And some are like the rose, incredibly beautiful yet prickly. Today, we celebrate the incredible beauty of flowers in all of their uniqueness and diversity, and the incredible beauty of being human in all of our uniqueness and diversity. The flower you hold in your hand is something like you, unique and special and beautiful. Full of loveliness, with a history and a family group, with likes and dislikes, with limitations and gifts. Will you please join me in our gray hymnal with our unison reading, number 724, The Consecration of the Flowers. Infinite Spirit of Life, we ask thy blessing on these thy messengers of fellowship and love. May they remind us, amid diversities of knowledge and of gifts, to be one in desire and affection and devotion to thy holy will. May they also remind us of the value of comradeship, of doing and sharing alike. May we cherish friendship as one of the most precious gifts. May we not let awareness of another's talents discourage us or sully our relationship, but may we realize that whatever we can do, great or small, the efforts of all of us are needed to do thy work in this world. Amen. It's now time for a story for all ages. Anyone who'd like to see the pictures, please make your way forward.
I was just told I look like the flower goddess. I have a prop today. This is one of my favorite services. I just love this flower service. So today I am reading about lupin or lupines. They're in this book. Being from the Midwest, I didn't really know that much about them. I keep wanting to call them lupines, but it's lupin singular, lupins plural. And I actually found some photos that I thought I'd let you guys pass around. So if you're not familiar with the flower, you can see the beautiful purple. Purple's my favorite color, so I just think they're gorgeous. I was inspired by this book, and I ordered some that will grow in this growing zone. So, here we go. The name of our book is Miss Rumpius. Rumpius. We'll say Miss Rumpius. The lupin lady lives in a small house overlooking the sea. In between the rocks around her house grow blue and purple and rose-colored flowers. The lupin lady is little and old, but she has not always been that way, I know. She is my great aunt, and she told me so. Once upon a time, she was a little girl named Alice who lived in a city by the sea. From the front stoop, she could see the wharves and the bristling masts of tall ships. Many years ago, her grandfather had come to America on a large sailing ship. Now he worked in the shop at the bottom of the house, making figureheads for the prows of ships and carving Indians out of wood to put in front of cigar stores. For Alice's grandfather was an artist. He painted pictures, too, of sailing ships and places across the sea. When he was very busy, Alice helped him put in the skies. In the evening, Alice sat on her grandfather's knee and listened to his stories of faraway places. When he had finished, Alice would say, "When I grow up, I will too go to a faraway places, and when I grow old, I too will live beside the sea." "That is all very well, little Alice," said her grandfather, "but there is a third thing you must do." "What is that?" asked Alice. "You must do something to make the world more beautiful," said her grandfather. "All right," said Alice, but she did not know what that could be. In the meantime, Alice got up and washed her face and ate porridge for breakfast. She went to school and came home and did her homework, and pretty soon she was grown up. Then my great aunt Alice set out to do the three things she had told her grandfather she was going to do. She left home and went to live in another city, far from the sea and the salt air. There she worked in a library, dusting books and keeping them from getting mixed up, and helping people find the ones they wanted. Some of the books told her about faraway places. People called her Miss Rumphius now. Sometimes she went to the conservatory in the middle of the park. When she stepped inside on a wintry day, the warm, moist air wrapped itself around her, and the sweet smell of jasmine filled her nose. "This is almost like a tropical isle," said Miss Rumphius, "but not quite." So Miss Rumphius went to a real tropical island where people kept cockatoos and monkeys as pets. She walked on long beaches picking up beautiful shells. One day she met the Bapa Raja, king of a fishing village. "You must be tired," he said. "Come into my house and rest." So Miss Rumphius went in and met the Bapa Raja's wife. The Bapa Raja himself fetched a green coconut and cut a slice off the top so that Miss Rumphius could drink the coconut water inside. Before she left, the Bapa Raja gave her a beautiful mother-of-pearl shell on which he had painted a bird of paradise and the words, "You will always remain in my heart." "You will always remain in mine too," said Miss Rumphius. My great aunt, Miss Alice Rumphius, climbed tall mountains where the snow never melted. She went through jungles and across deserts. She saw lions playing and kangaroos jumping, and everywhere she made friends she would never forget. Finally, she came to the land of the lotus eaters, and there, getting off a camel, she hurt her back. "What a foolish thing to do," said Miss Rumphius. "Well, I have certainly seen faraway places. Maybe this is a time to find my place by the sea." And it was, and she did. From the porch of her new house, Miss Rumphius watched the sun come up. She watched it cross the heavens and sparkle on the water, and she saw it set in glory in the evening. She started a little garden among the rocks that surrounded her house, and she planted a few flower seeds in the stony ground. Miss Rumphius was almost perfectly happy. "But there is still one more thing I have to do," she said. "I have to do something to make the world more beautiful." "But what? The world is already pretty nice," she thought, looking out over the beautiful ocean. The next spring, Miss Rumphius was not very well. Her back was bothering her again, and she had to stay in bed most of the time. The flowers she had planted the summer before had come up and bloomed in spite of the stony ground. She could see them from her bedroom window, blue and purple and rose-colored. "Lupin," said Miss Rumphius with satisfaction. "I have always loved lupins the best. I wish I could plant more seeds this summer so I could have more flowers still next year." But she was not able to. After a hard winter, spring came. Miss Rumphius was feeling much better now that she could take walks again. One afternoon, she started to go up and over the hill where she had not been in a long time. "I don't believe my eyes," she cried when she got to the top, for there on the other side of the hill was a large patch of blue and purple and rose-colored lupins. "It was the wind," she said as she knelt in delight. "It was the wind that brought the seeds from my garden here, and the birds must have helped." Then Miss Rumphius had a wonderful idea. She hurried home and got out her seed catalogs. She sent off to the very best seed house for 5 bushels of lupin seeds. That is a lot of seeds, 5 bushels. All that summer, Miss Rumphius, her pockets full of seeds, wandered over fields and headlands sowing lupin. She scattered seed along the highways and down the country lanes. She flung handfuls of them around the schoolhouse and back of the church. She tossed them into hollows and along stone walls. Her back didn't hurt her anymore at all. Now some people called her the crazy old lady. The next spring, there were lupins everywhere. Fields and hillsides were covered with blue and purple and rose-colored flowers. They bloomed along the highways and down the lanes. Bright patches lay around the schoolhouse and back of the church. Down in the hollows and along the stone walls grew the beautiful flowers. Miss Rumphius had done the third, the most difficult thing of all. My great aunt Alice, Miss Rumphius, is very old now. Her hair is very white. Every year there are more and more lupins. Now they call her the Lupin Lady. Sometimes my friends stand with me outside her gate, curious to see the old, old lady who planted the fields of lupins. When she invites us in, they come very slowly. They think she is the oldest woman in the world. Often, she tells us stories about faraway places. When I grow up, I tell her, I too will go to faraway places and come home to live by the sea. That is all very well, little Alice, says my aunt, but there is a third thing you must do. What is that, I ask? You must do something to make the world more beautiful. All right, I say. But I do not know yet what that can be. So this is your story to think about and share. And we have a treat here. Reverend Lisa got these for all of you for today. These are little balls of wildflower seeds. So if you plant them, then they should come up with your own flowers.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm Rexanna Lester, and I've been a part of this church for 36 years. I grew up on a farm in Oklahoma next to a small town with 950 people and 10 churches. If there was nothing happening at our little Methodist church, there was something happening at the Baptist church around the corner or the Assembly God church down the street. It was simple, easy, boring, and cyclical. Cyclical. As we sang, Just As I Am, the town's heavy drinker came down the aisle for altar call every year during the annual revival. Even though I felt loved and I picked up some musical skills, I started plotting my escape at age 12. My plan worked. I've traveled the world and lived in Europe and Asia. I married into the Unitarian Church. After a dozen years, I cut ties with the husband, but I kept the church. When I was called to come be the executive editor of the Savannah Morning News, I knew I would need support. I knew the job would be difficult and soul-sucking, and I would regularly need to be around like-minded people. And I wanted my 12-year-old daughter to have UU values, friends, and support. She was married in this church in 2005. The people in this church have been interesting, frustrating, and inspirational. Presidents of school boards, CFOs of corporations, leaders of marches for justice. I have deep regrets that I missed chances to know some of them better. John Ralston was an old white guy who sat on the front row of this church with these gigantic hearing aids. I didn't get to know him. I found out after he died that he had been instrumental in the civil rights movement and represented the UU church there. I have regrets that I didn't always speak up when I saw problematic behavior and thought, oh, that's just the way this person is. Or maybe it's just a time or two. Or maybe it wasn't really that bad. Missed opportunities to maybe make a difference. When I was asked to be on the Healthy Congregations team, I thought, okay, maybe I can learn something. Maybe I can be helpful. When Jane Hoffman, Jacqueline Smallwood, and Dan Flaherty and I started meeting and decided to work through all 53 segments of the UU curriculum on right relationship teams, so much seemed to apply to many parts of our lives. How do we reach out and react to each other, to other people? How do we work through problems? How do we really listen to others who disagree with us? Our committee mandate was part of a UU initiative to help congregations all over the country work through issues with specific guidelines. We weren't to be involved with staff issues. That was up to the minister. We weren't to be involved with issues between a congregate and a minister. That was up to the board and the UUA, our national organization. But we were here, and we could listen. Our job was not to give opinions, but allow members to give theirs, sometimes based on facts, sometimes based on things they had heard or felt or experienced. It was agonizing and cathartic. There were tears. My tongue has scars from biting it. But I've seen this movie before. Every decade or two, we have a crisis, and it pulls at our heartstrings and our structures. We've never taken the time to do the intricate, intimate work that could help us effectively deal with some of the big issues. We are the heavy drinkers coming back to the altar for salvation. And we listened some more. People talked about how much this church means to them, how it's the only place in this city where we can be our quirky, questioning selves, where we receive energy from the thinking and the sense of purpose people here feel, where we revel in the music and feel a sense of joy with each other. If I have a problem, I know there are a dozen people from this church I can call. They may not be happy about it, but they would come rescue me. We take each other to doctor's appointments. We take food. We check on each other. Our minister has been dealing with eye surgeries and words like a hole in the macula and a retina that doesn't want to stay attached is part of the discussion. Our beloved community answers the call to help, even if we are flawed. But we don't always take the time to really hear each other. The listening circles were eye-openers. Each was different. Each gave insights into how much this church means to us. One person even said that maybe we talk too much about love. You won't find that in the final report, because someone only said it once, and we were looking for themes and things that people repeated multiple times. Again, you can find the report on the members section of our website. I've been on our UU board a couple of times, chaired committees. With imagination and hard work, they can be fun and productive. But as an old boss of mine used to say, reworking policy pages can be as boring as pig poop. And they often don't get the attention they deserve. The first time I met the current board, I remember thinking, this is an amazing group of intelligent women with a wealth of business and nonprofit experience. But we have all learned the importance of crystal clear policies and procedures. The ones we were following may not reflect what we want this church to be. So what happens next? It's up to you. The minister, this year's board, and the new board that you will vote on today have been thinking about possible changes for months, and they have and will say much and do much in the next months. The Healthy Congregation team has offered suggestions based on what we heard from you. What are the policies and processes that will help us move forward toward healing and help us deal with problems in a clear, consistent, and just way? How can you help? We need your creativity. We need your intelligence and willingness to do the work. Get to know the board. Now is not the time to say, let someone else deal with it. Now is the time to listen and work with each other and to build the church that we want to be. We are the church. If we sit back, it will be someone else's church. The church will be as good as we make it, with grace and love at the center.
Of crocus. up from the cold.
Most of you know that I'm a practicing Taoist, so when I lead meditations for our group, they kind of blend Taoist practice and some UU values together, and I sound like a troll because of the allergies, but my heart is full of love. And I feel very tall. Thank you, Gigi. In Huang Lao Taoism, we acknowledge that growth and change are never-ending processes in the natural world and in human beings, which are, after all, part of the same whole. Today, we will welcome these transformations, which we believe are always being presented in service of the cultivation of our minds, our bodies, and our spirits. If you feel comfortable doing so, please bring your hands together in prayer position in front of your heart. In this practice, we bow to begin our meditations. We are bowing to our higher selves, the sacred, special self that resides within each of our physical bodies and which connects us to the wisdom, grace, compassion, patience, and metamorphosis we are each capable of achieving. Please close your eyes and take a reverent bow. Now place your hands wherever they are comfortable. Today, we are spending time focusing on blossoms and blooms. Biologist and author Dr. David George Haskell studies and writes about the transformative power of flowers. Dr. Haskell classifies these natural beauties alongside dinosaurs and animals as part of the pantheon of revolutionaries. While they were late arrivals to planet Earth, approximately 130 million years ago, they swiftly became the foundation of most rainforests, prairies, mangroves, and seagrass meadows around the world. And then, a fact ignored by many of us, they became the foundation for human survival. In an interview on NPR Science Friday, Dr. Haskell states that flowers opened opportunities for other animals and created the most productive ecosystems on the planet. So we think of them as ephemeral and merely ornamental, but in fact, flowers are extraordinarily powerful world changers. Dr. Haskell considers flowers revolutionaries because their beauty and colors and aromas draw other creatures into cooperative relationships with them. Bees, butterflies, and beetles are all ancient and productive pollinators attracted to the aesthetic qualities of flowers. Many flowers then encase their seeds inside of enticingly colorful and sweet-smelling fruits, providing sustenance while spreading these seeds through wind and animal droppings and decomposition, extending their growth farther. The three most commonly consumed grasses, wheat, maize, and rice, are actually flowering plants themselves, providing two-thirds of the calories consumed by humans worldwide. Animals munch on these grasses, too, so humans who consume meat products also have flowers to thank for that nourishment. As Dr. Haskell states, we wouldn't be here without flowers. In Huang Lao Taoism, we also talk about cooperative relationships. To start, we believe that every living thing contains energy. When we sit in meditation together, these energies interweave and offer support to one another. Like a flowering plant, our own cultivation begins with the planting of a seed, the reverent bow we take at the beginning. As we sit with our eyes closed, the seed sprouts roots and a stalk, the energy climbing from our tummies up to our hearts. We continue to breathe and we feel the energy rise further, up between our eyes and even out of the tops of our heads. These are our blossoms and leaves, the flowering plants of our spirits, growing upwards toward the sustaining sun, calling to eager pollinators with their beauty and life and colors. If you feel comfortable, place one hand on your lower tummy and one on your heart. Imagine you are a flower. Pick any flower that naturally pops into your mind. No need to overthink it. Lily, lavender, lilac, or lotus. It can even be an imaginary flower, a rainbow daffodil, or a flaming dandelion. Unlike the flowers here today, you do not need a vase. Your plant grows in fertile soil. Hold the flower in your imagination. We're going to sit and breathe for a few moments. As you breathe, one hand on tummy, one on heart, imagine your flower growing from the root to your crown, simultaneously deepening its roots while its petals open to the sky. Sit, enjoy, and appreciate your flower. Breathe here. as flowers spread their seeds, entice animals, and offer sustenance to humans, your flowering energy can support the garden of spirits growing all around us. Imagine the pollen from your flower being spread around the room, mingling with the pollen of every other flower. That pollen can float out of these doors, carried by the breeze. It can be picked up by flying and crawling insects to be carried long distances. It can settle on the steps and be tracked through town by unsuspecting feet. It is bigger than your physical self. It is the impact of your energetic cultivation rippling ever outward. If you feel comfortable, please raise your hands and hold them palms outward towards those sitting in front of you. Hold them here and breathe as you imagine this collaborative ecosystem of growth and nourishment. Lastly, please return your hands to prayer position. Your flowering beauty does not go unnoticed. Like flowers, you yourselves are catalysts of revolutionary change, cultivating here together. Know you are treasured. Know you are special. Know that even if you feel like a small, fragile thing, you are a colorful, beautiful force for unending transformation and evolution and reciprocal support. You are a blessing. Please take a small bow and open your eyes.
Reading today is Beauty by J. Ruth Gendler. Beauty is startling. She wears a gold shawl in the summer and sells 7 kinds of honey at the flea market. She is young and old at once, my daughter and my grandmother. In school, she excelled in mathematics and poetry. Beauty doesn't anger easily, but she was annoyed with the journalist who kept asking her about her favorites, as if she could have one favorite color or one favorite flower. She does not mind questions, though, and she is fond of riddles. Beauty will dance with anyone who is brave enough to ask her. Will you please rise in body or spirit and join us in hymn number 305, De Colores. We will be singing verse 1, verse 2, and then the Spanish verse that's also marked as 1. I know we've gone late the last few weeks, but just sit tight for a little bit. I just have a short message that came from Reverend Lisa's archive. So I'll be reading it, but imagine that it's Reverend Lisa's words that she's sharing with us. My grandparents' friends, Harold and Irene, ran the only flower shop in their small town for many years. If an arrangement was needed to celebrate a birth or a marriage, or to honor a life just ended, if a corsage was called for, or if any occasion necessitated a bouquet a bit more formal than what could be created out of a backyard garden, then Harold and Irene's floral shop was the place to get it. You could say that Harold and Irene, at least during those years, made a living out of making the world more beautiful. But the beauty I remember most couldn't be purchased inside the shop. It grew out of the cracks in the sidewalk in front of the store. Great wild bunches of petunias that escaped the big planters and went to seed and blossomed in the sidewalk year after year. We looked forward to those petunias summer after summer, my sister, brother, and I. We'd wander through the shop checking out the pots of vases and green plants. We'd peek in the refrigerated case to feel the coolness, glimpse the bouquets ready for pickup or delivery. We'd perch on stools in the back room, visiting with Harold and Irene and watching their assistant Leone skillfully arrange flowers to order. But those petunias delighted us. It was the unexpectedness of it. The way flowers weren't supposed to grow out of cracks in the sidewalk, but absurdly did anyway. That was beautiful to us. That and the visual image of the deep purple flowers and the bright green foliage contrasted against the gray concrete of the sidewalk. We were too young to consciously recognize that there was also a kind of beauty in the independence of those petunias, in their refusal to stay where they were put, their insistence on striking out on their own, their ability to thrive in less than ideal conditions. That sidewalk has been repaved. Harold has been dead for many years. The new owners run the flower shop. But Irene still lives in the apartment at the rear of the building. When I visit Grandma this summer and we go to call on Irene, we'll enter through the back door, passing tidy tubs of geraniums and perhaps a tomato plant or two, not unlike the pots on my own porch. But later, before we walk back the hill, up the hill to Grandma's apartment, I'll go around front and gaze at the sidewalk next to the door, and I'll see petunias blooming there. When I grow up, I will go to faraway places, and when I grow old, I will live by the sea. That is all very well, little Alice, but there is a third thing you must do. You must do something to make the world more beautiful. Between them and Mrs. Rumphius and her grandfather and her great niece, they hit on a pretty sound three-part plan to a successful life. Go to faraway places, return to live by the sea, and do something to make the world more beautiful. I don't take the first two parts of the plan too literally, and really, they're topics for another sermon. The third part of the plan is what interests me today. Do something to make the world more beautiful. It sounds kind of grand, doesn't it? Making the world more beautiful is the task of artists, painters and sculptors and photographers and musicians, and the forces of nature. Not ordinary folks like us who never learned to color inside the lines, who got C's in art class, who cut off the tops of heads in snapshots, and can't even paint a kitchen wall without getting paint on the floor and in our hair and all over our hands and on our clothes. It is not surprising that both Miss Rumphius and her great niece, when challenged to do something to make the world more beautiful, agreed with some reservation, but I do not know yet what that can be. In an interview on NPR, Desmond Tutu said, "We were made to enjoy music, to enjoy beautiful sunsets, to enjoy looking at the billows of the sea, and to be thrilled with a rose that is bedecked with dew. Human beings are actually created for the transcendent, for the sublime, for the beautiful, for the truthful. And all of us are given the task of trying to make this world a little more hospitable to these beautiful things." I agreed with Archbishop Tutu, and more than simply making the world more hospitable to beautiful things, I think perhaps we can't help but make the world more beautiful ourselves. I think we do it or allow it to happen all the time, usually without noticing. In the reading this morning, Ruth Gender gave us beauty, who excelled in mathematics and poetry, and plays no favorites, not among the colors or the flowers, and not, I believe, among the creators of beauty. In noble acts of recycling, picking up our litter before leaving a campsite, cleaning a shoreline, building a habitat house, preserving an acre of rainforest, we make the world more beautiful. In humble acts of singing a lullaby or putting fresh flowers on a grave, we make the world more beautiful. In joyous acts of dancing in the rain, making angels in the snow, we make the world more beautiful. in everyday acts of planting a garden or blowing soap bubbles or maintaining our homes or sewing a quilt or strumming a guitar, we make the world more beautiful. One of these, or something similarly unassuming, is the unique something that I will do to make the world more beautiful. It's the unique something that you do to make the world more beautiful. Perhaps the third thing any of us must do when we grow up, or even now, is not so much find a way to make the world more beautiful, but to recognize when we do so and to keep doing it. That's what Miss Rumphius did. That her lupine spread beyond the bounds of her garden was an accident of the wind and the birds. But she had the eyes and the heart to recognize that they were her something to make the world more beautiful. And so she joyfully expanded on the already good things she'd stumbled onto. Harold and Irene's petunias were an accident too, but they let them grow, making that sidewalk and my memories more beautiful. And remember, beauty will dance with anyone who is brave enough to ask her. May it be so. Amen. Will you join in rising in body or spirit to join in our last hymn, number 207, Earth Was Given as a Garden? Maybe we just sing the first verse. Let's sing the first verse. As we leave this place, may we not know what it is that we will do to make the world more beautiful, but let us have the eyes and the hearts to know when it comes along and the courage to ask beauty to dance.
This is Reverend Lisa Day. I hope you've enjoyed this program from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Please join us at one of our services sometime soon at our church on Troop Square or live on Zoom. We're the beacon of liberal religion in Savannah, and you can find out more at uusavannah.org. We meet on Sundays at 11 a.m. Thanks for listening.